This is the AMPIC Cyber Critical Assets Podcast. Each episode, we cover important OT and ICS security topics with an eye toward standards and regulation to keep you ahead of your adversaries and your auditors. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are. I am Patrick Miller, and welcome to the Critical Assets Podcast. With me, I've got Kylie McClanahan, longtime friend and CTO of Bastazo. We're going to talk today about vulnerability management, patch management in the industrial control systems and OT world. I'll let you give your background, but I know this is something you've got an extensive depth of experience in, and I'm going to just pommel you with questions about this to try to get some sense for everybody else. So first, introduce yourself. Tell us a little bit about your background.
Yeah, thrilled to be here. So I'm Kylie. I've been working in the space a long time, electric utilities in particular, and with the vulnerability and patch management and the kind of remediation space, recently finished my PhD in computer science, but my research was all this.
Fantastic. Congratulations. You earned that.
Thank you.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to start off the top with the big question. Patching and vulnerabilities. There's this regular push from all the powers that be that you have to go patch everything in OT. And let's just talk about that first. Is this true? Do you need to go patch everything in OT? And if yes, why? And if no, why not?
Well, I think it's not realistic. Whether or not you should, it's not realistic that you're going to, and especially
right.
when you're considering operational risk, you're not going to go patch everything. And so any strategy has to take that into account.
Right. Now, okay, so if you're not realistically not going to be able to do so, there is this one approach I've heard is kind of like the now, next, never approach. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah. I think there's a benefit in that. From a psychological perspective, I don't love the word never. Because you don't need to fix it right now doesn't mean you won't need to fix it in the future.
Right.
And I feel like never is easier to shove in a box and say, well, those go under the bed and we don't think about them.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to something like later or defer or, you know, to monitor.
Okay. That makes more sense. I agree. I've always had a kind of a rub with the term never. I mean, although I know deep inside, I can pretend it's not going to be a never, and we're going to call it something else, but they're likely never going to do it anyway. But anyway, they'll just replace it. They'll run it to fail. awesome. You know how it is. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Well, okay. That makes sense. So now I want to jump into the difference between a vulnerability and a patch. So give me
yeah.
your thoughts. Yeah.
The thing that I tend to explain to people first is that you have a many-to-many relationship, in that one patch may fix several vulnerabilities, and in some cases, one vulnerability may need multiple patches to fully fix. If you want to take it one step more complicated and you talk about vendor security advisories, one advisory may span multiple vulnerabilities and multiple patches for multiple products. It's one hell of a database structure. But I think you have to kind of go a little bit more bird's eye view to say, what is this patch fixing? But also, if you have one vulnerability that is bad enough to need a patch right now, you may also get additional benefit from patching it by patching these other less likely vectors.
Okay, so that is complex. Now, multiple vulnerabilities possible per patch, multiple patches possible per vulnerability, and then multiple of either per notice, per product, per vendor, or multiple products included per vendor. Yeah, so trying to manage all of that, I'm going to say, like everyone does with a spreadsheet, what do you think like the success level is going to be?
Well, not to be cliche, but it's going to depend on what you know. Mm-hmm. It's going to depend on what's in that spreadsheet. And I mean, asset inventory is the perpetual task. You feel kind of like Sisyphus.
Yeah.
But you do have to know.
Okay.
You do have to know what you got.
Yeah, well, it always comes back to the asset inventory situation, doesn't it?
It does.
Well, true. Now, okay, so we've got this complex issue of whether how to prioritize, and then prioritizing based on the notices that you're getting, because typically you're not going to know about it unless you get a notice
Right.
from the vendor or from, say, like a Kev list or something like that.
Yeah.
Now, first, tell me, because you've dealt a lot with these, you've pulled apart these notices, you've examined this in depth. What do you think about like the level of quality? And you don't have to name any vendors, but just kind of generally speaking, what are the level of quality in the, I guess, the patch notifications, even in that are
Yeah.
vulnerability notifications in some cases, because they do like a workaround notice sometimes. But what do you think about the level of quality and in general, if there are gaps, kind of what do you think could be improved?
Yeah, there's two aspects to this, and one is machine readability, and that's going to be my soapbox for now and forevermore. In that, if your security advisories are not machine readable, you are putting a roadblock in the way of any sort of automation. Now, when we talk about machine readable security advisories, I tend to point to CSAF, the Common Security Advisory Format. It's a standard to be able to represent security advisories in a machine readable way. The BSI out of Germany has been a huge proponent for it. When a vendor provides machine readable advisories, we do tend to see higher quality. And I'm wondering if there's a little bit of self-selection in that the ones who are motivated and or resourced enough to be able to do that have also set aside the effort to make that data as good as possible. When the advisories are not machine readable and they're just HTML, quality varies wildly. The one of the hardest things, there's literally a section of my dissertation that's trying to scrape data from security advisories. Of course, then I sat in on Jens Weisner doing a talk on CSAF and just thought, well, there's that piece gone. But when we talk about HTML advisories, the headers for sections are different. Is it description or is it vulnerability description? Is it workaround or is it patch? Or is it fix or is it solution? Any or all of the above. Don't even get me started on affected products. And to some degree, each vendor gets to specify their own format and stick to it. And so there's benefit to that. But it really starts to hinder the people on the other end trying to do remediation when they have to go find this manually.
When you say there's benefit to that, what do you mean? Because my first take on that is I don't see any benefit to that whatsoever. It just seems like it makes it harder for everybody else to digest
Well,
what you're sending.
that's fair. I'm thinking maybe it's not a benefit, maybe it's just the lack of a downside. I keep thinking of that XKCD comic where it's like, we have 15 competing standards, we should make one unifying standard. And the next panel is like, you have 16 competing
Now I
standards.
have 16 standards. Yes.
But I will say that CSAF is being adopted more widely, and that's been really encouraging, to say that maybe we don't have the 16th competing standard. Maybe we have one that that's going to prevail. As far as the vendors doing their own thing, it really, I mean, it does make things much more difficult. And I realize it's a difficult problem, and there are intricacies of data that can be hard to map, but it sure would be nice if they were all the same.
Yeah, well, I'll echo the sentiment, and we'll push CSAF.
Yeah.
I agree. I just what I don't see is any benefit to having some poor patch robot, or I call it a patch robot. It's actually some poor human that has to go read this,
Yes.
make sense of it,
Yes.
and try to discern what they mean by, as you put it, whether it's description or vulnerability description or fix versus patch
Yes.
or workaround or yeah, that's not something. And usually, it's not your most experienced,
Right.
veteran with multiple years of experience digging through these. It's like the person you could find to do this, which is likely right out of college, that this is the only job they could get in cyber.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. That's not cool. Okay. Well,
It's
I see
yeah.
the benefit there. That's quite well, in terms of pushing a standard, I think this is definitely something that everybody should be pushing.
Yes.
Yeah. Just based on from your experience, How many of the vendors in the OT space in particular have adopted this? Just percentage, rough estimate.
Well, I would say we have about less than 20 who
Less
have
than 20%.
reliably, less than 20 vendors
Less than 20 vendors. Okay.
who have adopted it. Now, when you look at percentages, things are going to get like, I will call out Siemens. They do a great job.
Hey, okay.
And so like when you look at, I have no earthly idea what their market share or whatever is. If you look at the number of devices, Siemens may cover a solid percent of them, but there's not that many. And like, you know, Microsoft is providing CSAF, great, as is Red Hat. Now you may see those often in or around control systems, but I would not call either of them necessarily an ICS vendor.
True.
And so does, you know, when we get into the semantics of what counts or what doesn't. But yeah, there's not a whole lot. I would certainly love to see some more adoption.
Okay. Well, that's good. So in terms of like versus percentage, if you had like a low to moderate to high, I'm assuming you're pushing this from what you've seen, at least down into the low space versus moderate or high.
As far as like adoption,
Yeah. From the vendor side, yeah.
from the
Okay.
vendor side, I would say
Yeah.
still pretty low.
Okay.
And I think there's some confusion in the space about, like, for example, the difference between CSAF and CSVF or VEX. Now they're doing different things, right? VEX is talking about exploits and vulnerabilities. CSAF is
Typically
talking
within
about
the SBOM context,
advisories.
right? VEX is
It,
traditionally in, okay. Yeah.
right. And there's some, you know, I know there's, I don't, I would not say there's a debate between CSAF and SBOM, but you see people sometimes talk about them in the same kind of context.
Okay, though that begs a question. What are the differentiators between them so that people can understand the differences?
You know, I this could be its own podcast. I would say to some degree, if you have an SBOM, you are now responsible for making sure that those packages, you as the end user or the end consumer, now have the ability slash responsibility to go check for vulnerabilities that may be in that product. Not that you can fix them, you can just bug the vendor to fix them. Although there may be workarounds or something that you could do. From a CSAF advisory perspective, it is a way for the vendor to report issues that have happened, especially those that the user cannot remediate themselves. If th there may be some, you know, open SSL vulnerabilities that show up in a product that the user can, you know, take some action to mitigate. There's going to be others that they cannot. And it doesn't matter if you have the SBOM for it. You can't do anything about it.
Yeah.
And so there's the, it, it's they can be related, but they're separate use cases. And in a lot of the environments that I see, and this is not me saying one is better than the other, but CSAF has more practical use for a lot of the operators that I interact with.
Okay. And I can see that as well, because as you mentioned, it's more of the responsibility of one side versus the other. And yeah. Okay. Now, when you say machine readable, what's the machine doing the reading?
Well, honestly, anything.
Okay.
Now you could. We could talk about scripting, whether you're doing that in Python or PowerShell or a Bash script. We could talk about Excel. You could talk about taking some of this data now and reading it into a spreadsheet, or you can talk about a tool, and that is part of what we do at Bastazo, a tool that can process them and show the output. One of the things about machine readable formats where you say you always know that there's going to be a field called product and it's going to be a string. It's never going to be a number. It's never going to be a date. Is that you can write one script that will always process data of that format. You know what to expect. You know what to do with it. And it's accessible at different levels. With the current system being these HTML advisories published on vendor sites, I could, if I had the time and the inclination, and I have done it a lot, I could write a script to go pull data from an individual vendor site. Now, that script is not going to be reusable to any other vendor site. And to be honest, in a month, when they deploy a website framework change, that script's going to be useless. And so you're constantly playing catch up, even if you have the resources to do that, as opposed to there's a URL that I can go to, and they have a list of all of their CSAF files, and you can pull that and use it. And that actually takes you out of the grunt work into having the data that you need to do the hard work.
Okay, so I'm hearing several different benefits. I'm hearing data quality. I'm hearing a greater degree of basically usage availability and the ability to automate in ways that you can't any other. Well, that would be much more prohibitive
Yes.
and would break a lot more in other ways. And from a labor perspective, we're talking about a significant drop in the labor cost for
Yeah.
the manual parts. Okay.
Yes. And like what, you know, one thing that it's my puffer fish is that we have incredibly skilled people doing work that we've been able to automate for 20 years. And I, you know, there's all sorts of reasons why it is still being done manually, but you have better things to do. This is not a, if you automate this, you can cut people. Absolutely no organization that I know is going to cut someone by automating this kind of stuff. You have
Right.
other things to do. You were handed this grunt work on top of your real job.
Yeah, I can see some tremendous benefit for SIP as well, for NERC SIP in
Yes.
particular, because of so much of that is required and the timing. And there's a lot of debate around what update means versus patch and all of those different
Yes.
semantic components to it as well. Oh, okay. Fantastic. Well, that does answer a lot around it. And I'm hoping, like in the back of my mind, we can lean on, since Jens is pushing this out of BSI,
Yeah.
maybe this will make its way around Europe in general, and we'll get like the whole globe gets to benefit from like the charging cord standards that, you know.
Yes.
Yes, thank you, Europe, for doing
Yes.
this for us. Yeah, we
And
appreciate it.
I am not an expert on the CRA. There are other people to talk to, but I know that there is part of the CRA that is providing machine-readable advisories.
Yeah.
You're going to have to do it.
Well, this is a call out to Sarah Flukes for a CRA talk coming up
Yes.
soon. So, yeah.
Yes.
Fantastic. Okay, now I'm going to switch gears on you. I'm going to want to talk a little bit about things in terms of the vulnerability side, because one of the things I want to get to is in this discussion around vulnerabilities and patching in the OTICS environment is prioritization. I mean, we know
Yes.
that it's, as you mentioned off the top, that it's just unrealistic. So to prioritize, I hear a lot that people should focus on something like the CISA, the DHS CISA KEV list or known exploited vulnerabilities list. What are your thoughts on this approach toward prioritization?
Yeah. So I think from the basics, if it's on the KEV, patch it, please. Patch it.
Run,
Patch
don't
it
walk.
now. Okay.
Okay.
Like, you may not have an asset inventory, but these are your edge devices. Like, please go find them and patch them. Now, what I will say about the KEV, and this is not a criticism, this is part of their binding operational directive. This is why the KEV was set up. Is it is the trigger essentially for federal agencies to do remediation of vulnerabilities. And so there's a certain set of criteria, three things that have to be true in order for something to be put on the KEV. First, it has to have a CVE assigned.
Okay.
Second, there has to be evidence of active exploitation in the wild, not just a POC, not just an exploit available, active exploitation in the wild. CISA ha likely has access to data sources
Yes.
that your average person doesn't. The third, and this is most crucial, is there has to be a fix, because if something going on the KEV is the trigger for the federal agencies to have to remediate things, you have to actually have a remediation.
Okay. Now, is the real quick on the remediation? Is that like a patch, or is that a workaround, or just some kind of remediation?
So it is going to be an update. Like, is it going to be a patch unless it's end of life?
Okay.
And then it's remove it.
Okay. Oh, okay.
So you're updating it or you are replacing it, because it needs to go. Now, the thing that a lot of people don't realize, and you know, to the name kind of contributes to this, like the known exploitable vulnerabilities catalog is not a list of all exploitable vulnerabilities.
Right.
There's vulnerabilities that don't have a fix yet. There may be vulnerabilities that are exploited but don't have a CVE for whatever reason. And so going back to the simple first thing I said, if it's on the kev, you should fix it immediately. But just because it's not on the kev doesn't mean it's not being exploited.
Okay. So Kev is probably like your baseline safety net, like just at
Yes.
least at a minimum do the Kev, but know that that's the floor for this kind of thing, right?
Yes.
Okay. Now, if you
Yes.
were to go above the floor to get this other kind of the things that are not just in the Kev, right? So that there is a CVE available, that there is evidence of exploitation in the wild, and that there is some form of fix. Now, we know that there are vulnerabilities that don't contain, all three of those, or even in cases, any
Right.
of them. If you were to get that additional vulnerability information, where is that available, or is it available?
Yeah. So I'll talk a little bit about prioritization framework. And
Okay.
it's the one that CISA uses, and then this is how the data source answer comes. And it's called the stakeholder specific vulnerability categorization. So it is a decision tree, but it's not like dynamically generated from training data like machine learning. This is an, you could say expert built tree. Conjunction with CISA and Carnegie Mellon. If you want SSVC, message me on LinkedIn. I'll give you the whole spiel. But it's a model. It's a combination of four fields. A couple are from the asset level, a couple are from the vulnerability level. So you have, is it being exploited? Is it actively proof of concept or no exploitation? Is it automatable, which is your Lockheed Martin cyber kill chain? Can you automate the first four steps? You have in CISA's, and there's slight variations, but in CISA's tree, what's the technical impact of this vulnerability on a device? Does the attacker get full control of the device? Is it a partial impact? Is there limited impact? And then you have the human impact, which is a combination of how crucial is this device to the mission of your org, and how crucial is the mission of your org to society at large. Now, the nice thing about that last one, which is a combination of the two, but is that you don't have to be a cyber person to answer that question.
True. Yeah.
If you want to talk about increasing, cross-functional collaboration or whatever the buzzword is, if you want to talk about bringing OT into IT and IT into OT, go ask your engineers how critical devices are. Bring them into the conversation. Now, the ones about the vulnerability, there are a few ways to get that. If you're looking for exploitability, there are things like ExploitDB, the news. I'll call out VulnCheck, who has some free community resources, particularly kind of around the Kev and other vulnerabilities that are exploited but aren't present in the Kev because they don't have a fix. When you're talking about is it automatable and the technical impact, sometimes you can get those from the vulnerability, but they can be harder to answer, particularly from kind of a lay, excuse me, from an operator perspective. And so CISA and the amazing Lindsay Cerkovnik started a program called Vulnrichment. It is vulnerability enrichment, as I'm sure you can tell from the portmanteau. So they have in a GitHub and also in the CVE JSON schema, data that gets added on to CVEs, where they answer those three: technical impact, exploitability, and automatable for you. And so if you're using SSVC for this priority and you get ACT, attend, or track is what they use, which is kind of where you get into that, like track is kind of keep an eye on. It's not shove in the closet. But if you're using this model, you can essentially fill in those three fields from the CISA Vulnrichment data feed. And then your environmental, what's the impact? Those are going to stay relatively stable. There's not a whole lot of things that are going to change the impact of your organization on society at large, or even the impact of one device on the mission of your org. Commissioning a new one, decommissioning, maybe a secret third thing. Like there's not a whole lot. And so you don't have to go in every time to say, how does this vulnerability specifically affect my device with my protections? I'm sure, wonderful things that you can do when you have all the data in the world. And I'm sure one day someone will put all that data together and it will be beautiful. Right now, people aren't. Right now, there's not the magic box that you plug in your numbers and it gives you the perfect score.
True. Yeah. Okay. Now, this is really, really useful. What I'm wondering is, I'm going to try to tie it all together.
Yeah.
So, since this is something you do, and you're basically one of the leading experts in this, if you were to say help an organization, and this is going to be a different answer for like a legacy organization versus a greenfield organization. So somewhere in the middle
Yeah.
there, or maybe a dual recommendation, but for an organization that is trying to make sense of this and take some steps forward, even from like a new program development. I want to move away from this poor, college grad that is now trying to read all these things and make sense of them and hand them
Right.
over to admins to patch them and prioritization based on KEB, but I know there's more. So if you were to say you should at least be doing these things to make sure that you're not falling below the floor, what would those things be?
Oh, yeah. I would say know your edge devices. I would love to say have an asset inventory. I know what's realistic. Know your edge devices. When you look at things in the KEV or things that are like really, high alert, lots of news, you see the same. You see the same handful. You see, and I mean, I'll call them out, Ivanti and Fortinet and Cisco, Palo Alto. Like and some of it, I'm sure, is the attention that edge devices get. You see critical vulnerabilities for those. You don't really see a whole lot of critical vulnerabilities for a PLC.
True, or RTU,
One,
or FET, or
right. Now, once you get inside, you can do a lot of nasty stuff. How do they get inside?
Well, we're hoping they didn't put these on the internet to begin with, but
I
assuming they
wonder.
didn't.
Well, right. And so, if you do nothing else, go get an idea of your edge. This is a KEV. If it's on the KEV, you need to patch it. I honestly really love SSVC because it lends itself so well to doing it in Excel, doing it in a script, using a larger platform or vendor. Taking it at those different levels lets you go from we're a legacy org, we're doing this in spreadsheets. Okay, let's take the macros that you've written in spreadsheets, and if we tweak them some, we can work them into this existing framework. If you have a little bit more technical expertise, you have somebody who can script, write a script to pull this data and display it. If you have the budget and the need to look for a tool, you can go talk with people to look for a tool. I believe when Lindsay spoke about some of this at VulnCon earlier this year, I think she said between 3 to 5% were marked as ACT, which is the highest severity. You need to do something now. There's a whole lot of vulnerabilities. Even 3% is a lot, but looking at 3% compared to all of them is already so much more manageable. If you put some of this, especially with like vulnerichment, vulnerabilities change. Or if not the vulnerability changes, the ecosystem changes. There may not be exploitation, and then there is exploitation. There may be a change in understanding. We thought this was partial impact on a device, and now it's total control of the device. If you use something like CISA's vulnerichment feed, as opposed to trying to have your own internal team that has enough expertise to know what all of these vulnerabilities do and can monitor enough news to find when things change. If you have something automated to say, we're going to look at our vulnerabilities using a framework like this, if you get an update to one of those fields that now there's active exploitation, that may change your priority.
Well, it should change your priority.
Well, right. And you can see that when you have some of this automated and you're not spending all of your time trying to finish essentially one pass on the data before getting ready for the next time.
Yes. And it's just a constant, I mean, it's a treadmill because there is, if even if you had an asset inventory and you were to start at the top and go to the bottom, by the
Yes.
time you got to the bottom, you'd need to start. That's like painting the Golden Gate Bridge, right? They basically, as soon as they're done, they
Yes.
start over and just it's a
It's
constant painting cycle.
I think my favorite it used specifically in the NERSIP case was the rolling calendar of doom.
The rolling calendar of doom. Perfect. Yeah, that's pretty much it.
Comes around and hits you in the face.
Every 35 calendar days. Yep. Okay, so this is super useful. Anything else you want to add that they should be doing in terms of trying to prioritize a vulnerability and patch management program? Just again, there's a ton of things they can be doing from a maturity perspective to get down further down the path, but just don't miss these things.
Yeah, I'll give you something I guess not to do.
Yeah.
Don't just use CVSS.
Right.
And I say this absolutely with no detriment to CVSS. It was designed to be a measure of vulnerability severity from a technical aspect. That is a separate question from one, what is the impact of this vulnerability on your systems?
Right.
And two, what do your existing protections look like? And so you can have both ways, something with a very high critical CVSS that actually would be a much lower severity in your environment, and you can have low severity vulnerabilities that can be much higher when you have something like a control system.
Okay.
And so it can be a useful indicator. If something comes out that's a 10.0, that can be a note to go look at it. But don't take that as gospel.
Okay, so in lieu of using that, or how do you balance that versus just not use it?
Well, I think you can use those data points as part of a larger system. If you were to talk about, there's some aspects of CVSS that could help inform, and not to pull us back to SSVC, but I'm going to pull us back to SSVC.
Yes.
Things like automatable, some parts of the CVSS vector can help inform that. Is the attack vector network as opposed to physical or local? You're more likely to be automatable if it's able to be attacked from the network. But when we get to things like confidentiality impact, integrity impact, availability impact, those are hard to quantify, period.
Yeah.
I mean,
Yeah.
they're not, they are qualitative metrics. They are not quantitative. And so if you're looking at, is this a low or medium confidentiality in my environment? What does that mean? And there's benefit. There are ways to use it and to track changes in vulnerabilities over time. But from an operator perspective, it's not going to be as useful. And in those cases, advisories are going to be much more helpful to you than merely a numerical CVSS score.
Okay. And that has been what I've seen a lot of is people relying just on that CVSS score and trying to base things on
Right.
that. Yeah.
And again, like psychologically, I was not a psych major, but it does kind of fa like human behavior is just kind of fascinating. It does make sense. You have a big, easy 0 to 10 number that's stamped absolutely everywhere. 10 is red, it's bad. 0 is green, it's good. Of course, you're going to use that to prioritize. A couple of years ago, I joined the CVSS SIG because I figured if I was going to complain about it, I might as well at least
Hey, good for
be
you.
part of it. And I they have a lot of discussions. We have a lot of discussions about where have the misunderstandings come and how do we clarify what it's intended to do versus what it's not.
Yeah, it is the first place, for example, when these things get released in various different media. So you'll see, like, the Register will have, this new vendor
Right.
X issue scores a perfect 10 and immediately goes
Right.
there. Yeah. It's easier. You're right. It's a 0 to 10 score. It's just much easier to wrap your head around for many. But don't use that as your only metric, is what I'm hearing.
Yes.
Perfect.
I think the last thing I'll add is that I see a lot of organizations who want to do things better.
Yeah.
They want a better way. And I think there's a lot that the community can do. I think there's a lot that organizational leadership can and needs to do to support that. And I think vendors play their part as well in machine-readable security advisories and other ways to support the kind of automation that improves the industry.
Okay, fantastic. Kylie, thank you so much for your amazing thoughts and sharing this
Thanks
with
for
us.
having
We
me.
really appreciate it. And I hope that everybody out there that has got this poor patch robot staff trying to manage this, and their
Yeah.
vulnerability management staff, or in some cases, they've never even gotten to vulnerability management because it's just too big
Yes.
of an elephant to try to eat all at once. I'm really hoping that they've taken this information and that what you've given them is going to be so useful to help them get something moving forward for them. But I really
Yeah.
appreciate it, and I'm
Yeah.
sure our paths are going to cross again at some conference soon, and I'll see you then.
I'm sure they will. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to the Ampix Cyber Critical Assets Podcast. You can find us on all your favorite podcast sources, so please like, subscribe, and share with your colleagues. Check out our other content, such as blogs, news, and more at ampixcyber.com. It's ampyxcyber.com. Ampix Cyber, securing your world.